a Bramble Jam podcast.
Hi, I'm Bran, and I love Christmas classic remakes.
I'm Alonzo, and I think there's a lot to be said for 1947, and this
is the Deck the Hallmark podcast. Hello, everybody. I am live on 34th Street. I just found out that video background exists. I'm late to the pandemic game. I'm late. I know it was all the rage, you know, 2 years ago, but look out. Brand's on it. Alonzo, how are you, pal?
I'm good. Even Hallmark Channel was giving you Zoom backgrounds on their website, and we know they're the last to latch on to anything technological.
So. That's how you know things were bleak. Last Monday of March, Alonzo, yes. Can you believe it?
I can. And what I can't believe is that I'm, as of this recording, and it may all go south by the time this airs, but I'm doing astonishingly well in the Deck the Hallmark March Madness bracket.
How many, let me see, I'll pull it up real quick, because the telltale sign is not how you are right now, but
my top pick is already points. Out.
Okay, gets... That's where it gets tricky.
It's going to hurt me later. Yeah, I thought Kentucky
was... You're tied for second. Look at you.
I know. It's crazy, right? And what's funny about that is that I know less than zilch about sports. I was literally like making my picks.
But that's the beauty of March Madness. Because I know things about sports. I don't watch a ton of college basketball. I usually try to watch the tournament games before the tournament, like the conference things. And then I listen to a bunch of podcasts and I think I know a lot and I fill up my bracket and I'm like, this is the year. No one's going to beat me. And I'm doing so bad this year. So bad. But as of this recording, which there's going to be a whole nother slate of games before this comes out, but I can still beat you. I have a possible maximum point.
Absolutely. And I won't be shocked if you do, because it's all super random, but weirdly enough, I almost never do them. My track record for this sort of thing tends to be better than my track record for picking the Oscars, because I know just enough to be dangerous. And so like, I always get those wrong. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Has the Oscars happened yet?
It was
last night.
Yes.
Well, exactly. I'm gonna say, looking into my crystal ball, that you crushed it this year, buddy.
We'll see. Well,
you're right. Join Bramble Jam Plus, and Alonzo will share how good or bad he actually did.
Why
his Oscar picks? I think that one year you need to come out to Greenville. You've seen our setup for March Madness, me and Dan, and
all the TVs. Yeah,
come on out. Come on and hang out. We'll watch some basketball together.
Because if there's anything I love more than watching basketball at home, it's watching basketball on the other side of the country. So yes, I would totally.
No, it's not just the other side of the country. It's with the boys.
True. No, it's in Greenville, and I know y'all have a fridge full of Reese's cups. So you know it's. It's a tempting invitation, I grant you.
I'm going to be late to this conversation, but I'm interested to hear. I feel like in true Hallmark fashion, we'll be late to the game. What are your thoughts? Have you heard the wheels or doors argument? You haven't heard about this?
Wheels or doors? No, I don't know this.
It's some stupid TikTok thing. Is there more wheels or doors?
In the world?
In the world.
I'm going to say doors, but I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I couldn't really commit to that.
I think I'm team wheels.
Okay.
I just think I got five wheels right under me right now.
That's true. You're right.
One door right here.
Yeah. No. I'm trying to think of, because the thing about wheels is they tend to, they appear in groups. So it could go either way, really. Magnets, how do they work?
Well, there you go, everybody. There's your TikTok conversation with the boys. I think this conversation has already is dead and gone, and so we're just trying to
trying to appeal to the kids here. Well, you know,
All right, now Alonzo's going to do the latest TikTok dance. Go, Alonzo. You got it. I was doing Hurdle, which is the music version of Wordle. Mm-hmm. Some days great, most days bad. And there was some song that everybody seemed to know, and I didn't know the song. And apparently, it's a TikTok song. Like, it got famous on TikTok.
Is it like Olivia Rodrigo or something?
No
shade.
Olivia Rodrigo is a treasure.
Sure.
And she needs to be guarded. I don't know who this. It was some guy on a piano, and apparently people. But isn't it crazy? Nowadays, the kids just make songs famous.
Look, the kids are getting stuff off of YouTube and TikTok, and you know, in our day, you had to listen to the radio to find out what was going on.
There's a game that Dan and Panda and I have done in the past. Wherever we're have a relatively long road trip, we'll go on Spotify and go to the trending chart that isn't just like the most popular songs, but there's songs that seem to be like
on the rise,
and we'll just give our opinions on them. And the amount of songs that I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't get what this is. I guess as far as I know, it's not music.
Every so often on Linoleum Nights, which is one of the Patreon shows for Linoleum Night, Dave will make me listen to like the top 20 charting songs this is a hilarious thing because my tastes tend to run to like, you know, old easy listening. And so and I'm like, okay, I guess that's a thing. Or like, oh, that's a neat sample. And I get, oh, that's the whole song then. Okay, gotcha. You know,
if Delilah's not playing it, I'm not interested. That's how I tend to go. Delilah, are you ready to talk about the 1994 Miracle on 34th Street?
Oh, you bet I am.
I'll do a little synopsis and then we'll break it down for the people at home. Miracle on 34th Street, this version, originally was released on November 18th, 1994. So, you know, better than the other one, I guess. It went a little something like this. Kohl's Department Store. Get out of here with your Macy's. Don't need it. Kohl's Department Store. They're doing their Thanksgiving parade. And the director, Dory, I didn't even realize that was her name. And she is trying to figure out the Santa. Santa's drunk, bad. And luckily, the real Santa, he's there to take the reins, literally. And one thing leads to another. And he becomes Kohl's Santa Claus for the holiday season. He starts doing crazy things that we've never heard of before, like sending people to other stores. Have you heard about this?
What?
What? Who would do this? Who would do this type of thing? the competitors aren't so fond of this fella and what Kohl's is doing. And so there's basically a coup to try to take this Santa Claus down. And one night he is arrested for assaulting a man on the streets. And it turns out that guy who was assaulted was the Santa that he was replaced, So, you know, lots of things at play here. And so Santa is now disgruntled, very sad. But in comes Brian. Brian is Dory's neighbor. And also he's in love with her. And also he's a lawyer who's going to defend Santa. So they go, they bring Santa in, and they're trying to prove that Santa does indeed exist. What are we going to do? How do we do this? Things are looking sad. That is until Brian realizes that on the $1 bill, there's a little In God We Trust situation. So if we can say that God exists, even though we can't see him, then we can say that Santa exists for that same very reason. The city of New York explodes, and the movie ends with, I guess, Santa making Dory and Brian get married, and they get a house. And that, my friends, was Miracle on 34th Street. The reboots.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. Relax. We're not there yet, Alonzo. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here on Deck the Hallmark. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Miracle on 34th Street. You know what's annoying is my mic doing that thing. That's going to be
the flicker, yeah. It's...
How's this? Is that better?
Ghost mic. Yeah, that's better.
It's a ghost mic. Is it real or is it not? Let's talk about this movie, Miracle on 34th Street. I'm interested to hear your opinion, obviously, but also to chat a little bit about the changes that you thought worked versus the changes that you think didn't work. So Alonzo, sure. I'll let you be a lead hitter, whatever the baseball term is.
Yeah, I didn't see this when it came out. I think I'm the right age where like that first wave of John Hughes movies hit me at just the right age. I was 16 when 16 Candles opened, you know. Yeah. I think I was a freshman in college when The Breakfast Club opened. And so you know, I was definitely on that wavelength and into his stuff. And then somewhere around Uncle Buck, I was like, okay, I think I might be done. So I didn't even
realize this was a John Hughes joint.
He wrote it. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I'm learning something new every episode.
Well, this was like, you know, right on the heels of Home Alone 1 and 2. And so obviously yeah. It's like, well, Christmas is working. What else you got? You know? And so he did this remake. It's... There are elements of the original that are in here that work and that are still charming. You know, instead of the Dutch war refugee, this time it's a deaf girl that Santa communicates with ASL, and it's still a powerful scene. And still, you see, I mean, the MVP of this movie is Mara Wilson. Let's face it. She was like 6 years old,
aka Matilda,
aka Matilda, aka the little girl from Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah, she comes in to play Susan Walker and kills it. This is right up there with the Natalie Wood as far as like greatest juvenile performances of all time. And Mara Wilson now, by the way, not mostly retired from acting, but has a very funny Twitter account and wrote a really good memoir a couple years ago that I would recommend.
She was at 90s con.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay.
Where all the cool kids were.
I could see that. That'd be the perfect. So, you know, I think a lot of that stuff works, but I think they paint themselves into too many corners. Like rather than have like the real Macy's and Gimbel's, we have these fictional department stores, and is one going to shut the other one down? And who cares about that? Switching it from the U.S. mail to the In God We Trust thing, I don't think has that same oomph. I would much rather a crowded courtroom of people getting excited than throngs of people in the streets of New York getting excited. That just seems like a thing you would do in a 90s movie anyway. I don't think this has the same charm as the original, but I will say it is leaps and bounds better than the early 70s made for TV remake, which was actually my first exposure to this as a kid, which is terrible. Which stars David Hartman, who went on to become the co-host of Good Morning America, Jane Alexander, who went on to become the head of the National Endowment for the Arts under Bill Clinton, and then Sebastian Cabot, who was Mr. French on Family Affair as Santa Claus. But this one's okay, but I think it's still not a patch on 47. Is this the one you grew up on, I guess?
This is the one. Funny story about this. I actually didn't see this until I was dating who would be my wife. So adult, I was in 1920. And, but I had seen bits and pieces of this because growing up, I went to a church where the pastor would play movie clips all the time sermon illustrations. And by the way, kudos, not the best, we don't need to get it. But what was impressive is that he was doing this in like, the early 2000s, and I was friends with his son, and I saw the amount of work that he would put into ripping movies off the TV and getting them into a digital file in the early 2000s was impressive.
That's so, commitment.
So kudos to him for, you know, breaking the law for the sake of the gospel.
fair use, Brandon.
Yeah, fair use. That's exactly right. But so I saw bits and pieces of this movie, and then I finally watched it, and maybe because it was my first Miracle on 34th Street situation, like movie that I saw. I didn't see the 1947 version until last week. But I loved it. And I love Matilda as well. Like I grew up on Matilda. So, you know, that works. And what's interesting is that so many of Matilda's lines in this movie feel just straight ripped from 1947. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that she talks, it like... She feels like she's from a different era.
Yeah, there's a whole thing in this movie where they're really trying to keep it, like, they want it to be timeless, even though you look at it now and it's like, couldn't be more 90s. But, like, she dresses, like, she dresses like a young lady of 1947. Like, you know, like every day for her is school pictures and then we're going to grandma's house, because like just the very nice little dresses. There's a scene where like all the kids are showing up at the department store to see Santa, and 201, they're all wearing like top coats and pea coats and Burberry scarves. And like, there's not a Fido Dido t-shirt or a acid wash jean jacket or a Bart Simpson cap in the bunch. Like they're all dressed very, you know, so I think they're going for a sort of old school, you know, the lawyer character looks like what a villain lawyer character would normally look like, because he's got the slick back black hair and the suspenders and the crisp white shirts. But, you know, they're obviously going for that kind of retro thing in this movie, but it's still very 90s.
I appreciated what they did with Brian here, and that he didn't just insert himself into the daughter's life so that he could get to like, there's they already knew each other, neighbors and stuff like that. So that played a lot better. And as you know, my first version of this is the In God We Trust thing. Uh-huh. And so I've been trying to think through which one I like better. I think that the buildup, the realization of the In God We Trust is good. Like when he gets the dollar, he sees it and he's like, oh, I can use this. And then bringing that to the judge, him seeing it, getting excited. I felt like that buildup and the realization worked a bit better than the like, oh, the post office is coming in and that's it. Right. It felt like a nice little build up and a realization. I will say, I think I like the post office reasoning better. Like because it's Santa related, you know.
Sure.
It's and, like and these letters. Go ahead.
No, you're right. They do play. They do stage it well in terms of like beat and then, you know, like the thing. But I think that if you think about it too long, it's like, okay, so if In God We Trust means that anything we can't see or tangibly verify should still be considered as fact, that opens up a legal door that you don't want to open, I think.
Yeah. It's shady, because somebody could be like, I didn't break in, I'm a ghost. Like,
exactly. You know,
so the
nothing
fact
means anything, you know.
The fact that the post office was Santa related, like these are letters from Santa, the post office says Santa is real, therefore Santa's real. Yeah. That's a much better argument. Because I had seen 1994 before,
sure,
the post office just felt super quick. It's like, here they all come. Oh, we're going to go help. Oh, we're going to bring them in. That's just it. We did it. Like, it was so fast. I was like, I kept waiting for like the next thing. So I liked the way in which they did it, but I don't like the reasoning, if that makes sense.
No, I totally get that. The other big difference for me is one of the things that I think is so charming about the 47 version is that you can come away from the end of that movie and either think, oh, well, Kris Kringle is definitely Santa Claus, or Kris Kringle is definitely not Santa Claus, but he does for people and brings to their lives what the real Santa would bring them. And so you get to live in that space of like, the movie doesn't come down on it one way or another, but it's, you know, you still have that feeling of like, even if he's not the real Santa, he has been a Santa for these folks, and he's brought that kind of Christmassy spirit. And in this one, it's pretty clear that he's Santa. Like, there's so much stuff that happens that only could happen if he were Santa Claus. And then, you know, which
like
also
actual kind of, reindeer,
for instance, yes. And that also ties into the stuff where, like, in the first movie, you know, yes, they do implement the policy of like sending people to other stores and all that, which is great. But in this one, they launch a national campaign where he becomes the face of the store. And it's like, I'm sorry, this movie starts at Thanksgiving. You are not launching a national ad campaign with a guy you barely know his background between now and Christmas, and then have that backfire on you. Like, that's such a leap of, okay, movie, I guess so, that the first one doesn't make you do.
Yeah, no, that's fair. This is a 1958 version, someone is saying in the chat.
I know there was like a radio version, and then there might have been like an early TV version. I haven't seen that one. From 58, but I did see that early 70s one, and that was not good. I revisited it for when I was doing the book research. The other thing is like around the time that you were a kid, probably, I saw my first HD TV. I went into like the, there was a Sony store at one of the malls here, and they were displaying all these televisions. And at first I just remember thinking, this looks so weird. Like everything is so bright and so like precise. And it just, it was disconcerting for me. And then I thought, but people are going to grow up looking at these. Yeah. And they're going to think that's what TV looks like. This is what movies look like, you know? And so there's something about like what your eyes are used to. So I don't know that you'll ever see it this way just because this is your era and the moment when you were a kid and how you took in stuff. But I can spot a 90s movie like at 10 paces. There's something about the way they're lit. They all seem kind of smoky. The women are all wearing like brown lipstick and those like, you know, like in this movie, there's all those sort of those kind of shapeless overcoats, but with the shoulder pads, it's like the worst of the 80s trickling in. I don't know. That's always a big weird standout.
Well, if you see Kevin, if you see Mr. McAllister's jacket, it's, probably like, that jacket is in every 90s movie somewhere. Just look for it. It's there.
True. The other funny thing here is that, like, you know, you get J.T. Walsh, who is this brilliant character actor playing the mean prosecuting attorney.
Yeah.
And Robert Prosky as the judge. And at that point in the 90s, you would expect to see those guys in like a David Mamet movie. Like they were like very serious actors who usually did a lot of very kind of dark material. And so to see the two of them in this like goofy family movie about Santa is kind of like, it's interesting and a little disconcerting.
We've gone almost 30 years without a remake. I feel like we are due, right?
You know, one would think. I'm sure somebody's trying to cook up an internet era version of what this story would look like. But you know, this one obviously, you know, was a hit, and I think for a lot of people, it is their kind of their go to one. And the original one, I think, still has a following as well. I mean, I find a lot of times that when movies get remade, when old black and white movies get remade, it's because like TV stations would rather show it in color, you know? And so I think that plays a big part of, you know, we have a color miracle on 34th Street. I guess we're covered for a while, you know, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody circled back to it.
In the hype of a con artist miniseries, let's do a miracle on 34th Street where Santa's actually just a con artist. I'm here for that. Inventing Santa.
enough with the true crime. I can't deal anymore.
Oh, you stop it. It's great. You love it.
I'm watching The Dropout. That's my one.
There you go. Is it good? I haven't seen it.
It is actually, yeah. And it's more about how not just that this woman like was determined to become sort of rich and important without actually doing the work of inventing something that worked, but how like these sort of older entrenched companies didn't understand the tech revolution and didn't want to get left behind. And so they were totally willing to buy into her nonsense.
Oh yeah. My favorite thing about her is that she changed her voice. I love that fact about her.
I can't do it, but Christy Lemire, who does Breakfast All Day with me, we've been doing it for the Patreon. She does a really good impersonation of it. I can't do it.
When you hear her actual voice, like in recordings, you're like, how?
If you just look at it, just one blood drop.
I need to be taken seriously.
One drop. Trust me, as I have this voice.
It's better than Anna Delvey's voice, I'll tell you that much.
You got the there you go, bingo.
let's talk about Christmas spirits. I want to do just a baseline, like what did he give you, but then also compare it to 1947 and the, because we both said like 10 out of 10, this is Christmas.
So. Yes, yes. I'm a little less so on this one just because I think this one gets like you don't get Albert in this one, who I really like, the kid who's the janitor in the first movie who likes to, you know, be Santa Claus at like the orphanage or whatever. So much of this movie is kind of given over to like corporate machinations, which I've never understood in kids movies. Like kids do not care about hostile takeovers. I don't know why that's such a go-to plot for these so often. But you know, again, you do get that parade. And it's funny. It's like you said, it's not Macy's this time. It's Kohl's. But you would be forgiven for thinking it was Macy's because, like, those star-shaped balloons and the Believe campaign. Like,
oh, they did everything they
what
could.
What Macy's does. And so it's it is, but it isn't, but it is. I would say it's a solid 8, though. There is, you know, the whole Santa land and the mall and all the people running around, you know, in the Santa hats and stuff. Like, I'd say 8.
The New York City-based Macy's department store declined any involvement with the remake, saying, quote, "We feel the original stands on its own and could not be improved upon."
Booyah. Thus,
the fictitious Kohl's became its replacement.
I believe it. They not that long ago, I think for the, was it like this? Well, no, this year is the 75th anniversary, but like for one of the recent anniversaries of the movie, they put a new balloon in the parade because they're to celebrate. And it was the big baseball player. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that balloon from the first movie, but they did it in black and white.
Wow.
Like which I thought was a very cool,
that is cool
idea.
And then Gimbel's had already been out of business.
Yeah. Gimbel's was already history. So.
Shoppers Express. That's interesting. That's interesting. I don't know. I feel like today Macy's would do it. Like Macy's would lend their name over to.
But I think also the whole plot is about like, oh, we have to save the department store because, you know, we're barely That's hanging true. On. And
Maybe they don't
want to. I don't think they would want people to think, oh, we're financially in trouble, you know.
Yeah, because we don't know that.
Yeah, exactly. Not talking about it if we are.
That's right. A little bit less than last week. I agree with that. Last week was as Christmassy as it gets. This is right up there. I think it's an 8.59 in that ballpark. Okay. But there's something about that first one that just hits all the point, you know, and the fact that it's in black and white doesn't hurt either. Like the Christmas nostalgia, black and white, just, you know, that all works.
I'm curious because I know I'm dragging you into these black and white movies and stuff. Have you ever seen a color film that also has like a black and white version, like Mad Max Fury Road or Parasite or any of those movies where like you've seen it in color and then you go back and watch it again in black and white?
I mean, the only thing I've done it with, and this is a really bad example, but I've seen It's a Wonderful Life in both.
Oof. Okay. Because that's terrible.
Yeah. Because they were both on Prime. And so like, I obviously watched Color because that's who I am, but then I watched a black and white since.
When after Parasite, you know, won the Oscars and did the whole thing, the director was like, you know what? I had wanted to do it in black and white and the cinematographer and I collaborated and we put together this black and white version. Like if you get the Criterion disc now, you get both versions. So I went back and saw it again in black and white and there's something about black and white that like, on the one hand, it is, you know, clearly how they made movies for a long time and it's just what movies looked like. But it also allows this certain level of kind of, it's not like dreamlike exactly, but it just, it removes it from your day-to-day experience because you are seeing something that is being captured in a photographic process that is not the way your eyes perceive the world. So, I don't know. Sometime when Nightmare Alley, they did one like for the new one. So they haven't released it on video yet, but like when that eventual Blu-ray comes out with both versions, like look at both of them and kind of, you know, see what your eyes are seeing. And I think it might kind of open up the idea of what makes black and white so cool.
I'll do it. Oh, Hallmark, how about you just make a black and white movie?
That would actually be kind of cool.
It would be interesting to see. Like it just put the Hallmark formula, but in black and white and just what it does to you.
Or, okay. Here's how they could start. Journey to Christmas.
Yeah. Journey Back to Christmas.
Journey Back to Christmas. The time travel CCB movie.
Do they have black and white scenes?
They do not. They should do the beginning and end in black and white, like Wizard of Oz. So like when she's in the 40s, it's black and white. And then it becomes color when she arrives in the 90s or whenever the ooze.
Or If I Only Had Christmas.
Okay, that, no.
Well, but that's the Wizard of Oz. I don't know if you've heard.
It is, but I think that one, all prints should be destroyed. So that's actually different. But no, I think that would actually, that would be kind of cool. And you know, yes, do your regular version first, but then like for the reruns to kind of make it kind of a gimmicky thing. Hey, check this out. Do one at least partially in black and white.
With,
that'd be fun.
With Timeless Christmas, Ron didn't do any black and white.
No, all the flashback stuff is, I think they would be afraid of black and white. I think that, you know, cause again, you and I are among the people who actively watch Hallmark movies, but I think a lot of people just turn the channel on during the holidays and have it on in the background. And I think if suddenly somebody looked up from the laundry they were folding or whatever, and there was a black and white thing on, they would either think something was wrong with their set or that they'd accidentally landed on TCM or something and they'd like change channels.
Yeah. Yeah. They should do it. Hallmark, just, I mean, we're just giving out good ideas.
We've got all the ideas, you guys.
I mean, and you can even do like a Miracle on 34th Street type of storyline. Like,
oh, for sure.
Gosh. Lonzo, I know what we're doing this summer. We're writing a movie.
I like it.
Have you ever written anything?
I haven't. That's never been my part of the pond, you know. Like I greatly admire people who do write fiction and write scripts, but it's just never been something that I felt like I ever had any proclivity towards. But you know, I think it would be fun to collaborate with somebody on something that was super Christmassy, just as somebody who knows the tropes so well by this point and could kind of like spitball ideas of like, here's something we haven't seen, you know.
Let's, I'm listening to but this is not important. Let's like crowdfund a movie, and by crowdfund, by crowdfund, what I mean is not monetarily. Uh-huh. I'm talking ideas. Let's throw all of our ideas into a melting pot. Alonzo and I will take them.
That wouldn't be a copyright nightmare at all. No.
Well, no. By putting the stuff in there, you agree
you're releasing it to
us. And we can then take it.
Well, let's see. I would much rather devote myself to hopefully we can sell enough copies of I'll Be Home for Christmas movies that there will be a raving demand for a second volume, because there's plenty more Hallmark Christmas movies y'all haven't reviewed yet on paper,
and plenty more Deck the Hallmark that needs to be on paper
for sure.
I don't know. We did what is it? Not nominations. Comparisons. Suggestions. Oh,
suggestions. Yes,
that's
yes.
The word. Suggestions. I nominate. But was there anything about this one that made you think of something else as far as suggestions go?
Not really. I mean, like the only what came to mind was a supremely non-Christmassy movie, just because I think J.T. Walsh is a great actor. And one of my favorite performances by him is in a movie called The Grifters, which I would recommend. But it's an R-rated film. It's very not Hallmark and not Christmassy. But no, if you haven't seen the 1947 one yet and you have seen this one, by all means, go back and see the original.
Just watch Matilda. Just watch Matilda. Why not? Every time I mean, it's so tough to like see her and not like think about Matilda or, you know,
I have to go back and look at it again, because I saw that movie when it came out in theaters and I was, you know, a grown man. I didn't love it. And even though like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is one of my favorites,
it's interesting.
I love a lot of the Roald Dahl adaptations. That one didn't do it for me, but I might need to give it another.
It's very magic heavy, and who doesn't like that? Who doesn't love a little magic?
And apparently people love the Broadway musical, so
I didn't even know it was a Broadway
musical. There is a Broadway musical of Matilda, yeah.
I'm going to make things float. My dad is a jerk. I mean, we wrote it right here. All right, Alonzo, we're back to doing our regularly scheduled program of going back and forth. So I will now take off my headphones. You will let everybody know what to watch before next week, and we'll go from there.
Cool. Okay, this is exciting. We're leaving 1947, I promise, but we're still in black and white because Bran has never seen the classic 1951 Scrooge, starring Alistair Sim as the legendary Dickens protagonist. And it is arguably one of the best, if not the best, of the theatrical Christmas Carol features. So that's going to be fun. We'll see you then.
Did we do it?
Yes.
Love it. Well, we'll be back next week. And until then, may we be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Deck the Hallmark is a Bramble Jam podcast recorded live in, yeah, that Greenville, South Carolina. Is produced by Brandon Gray. Set decor by Plum Haywood Mall. For more information on all Bramble Jam podcasts, you can go to BrambleJamPodcast.com. For more information on how to listen to Deck the Hallmark ad-free, you can go to BrambleJamPlus.com.